Live and local on AM 770 KTTH. Your independent conservative host, Todd Herman, welcomes you to The Todd Herman Show.
Today is the day the Lord has made, and I am grateful for the opportunity to chat with you on the radio station. I'm grateful for, since we brought the radio show back, the growth in ratings, and it's all you, 100% you. I don't know, this sounds very Trumpian, but I don't know that anyone's ever seen growth like this. Like, 22 rating slots we went up. 22. We're now the second most listened to talk show in Seattle in our demographic. And that's just phenomenal. Now, if we could just get rid of they got all the money in the world because they're government radio. So if we could get that done. Oftentimes, we'll start with Seattle News, Seattle Spirit, that there's just something far too important. I just saw Bo Snerdly, with whom I'll work tomorrow when I fill in for Rush, across all of Rush's incredible list of affiliates. I see that Bo Snerdly stands by the effort to make sure we get to the bottom of this election. I saw a tweet from a longtime listener of mine, Wombat. Wombat was concerned that Rush has given up on this. That's not my assessment by a long shot. So I want to start with getting ourselves grounded in facts like we did with the COVID. Because it's the same thing. We talked about this yesterday, so I'm not going to redo yesterday's monologue. But I want to start by offering you a resource. There is a work done by Central City News. It's a Louisiana-based paper. And it's by their editor, Woody Jenkins. And it's phenomenal. Eric Metaxas, who has a national radio show in his own right, brilliant author, wrote a book about Bonhoeffer. In the run-up to and throughout World War II, Friedrich Bonhoeffer. Eric is insanely concerned about Antifa in the streets, Black Lives Matter, Incorporated Domestic Terror Group, and Antifa Domestic Terror Group. He's incredibly concerned. Eric Metaxas says this election was stolen after reading this piece, or is nearly stolen. Text Todd, T-O-D-D, to 800-465-8770 so you have this in your resource kit. Let's start with this. Patterns. Prior to the election, we began warning you on the show that the Democrats wanted chaos. That they wanted a whole bunch of extra ballots floating around. They wanted people to be able to grab extra ballots, sign them, put them into systems. Laws change at the last second to pump ballots out to everybody. It's no longer colloquial. There's too many instances of people getting 3 and 4 ballots, of dead people getting ballots, of people who hadn't voted in 15 years getting ballots. Then, in Pennsylvania, they waived the requirement that a postmark appear on a ballot. Ballots can come in, what they say, 7 days after the deadline, meaning there's no deadline. No postmark. They set up a circumstance by which you never needed to prove the ballot arrived on time. Then the signatures didn't need to match. Then there didn't even need to be a signature. In Georgia, they set up 2 classifications of signature verification. One extraordinarily loose for new voters. All it had to do is match the thing you just signed. You could walk in and sign a card and then sign a ballot, and there you go. It's a match. Not tied back to any previous database. So they set up a circumstance that invites fraud, and everybody knows this. The same mockingbird members of the media who warned us about Dominion voting systems way back in 2012, in 2017, in 2019, are suddenly telling us it's the most secure system in the history of the world. All this is circumstantial. All this is environment building. And all of this are things that the courts in Philadelphia, or pardon me, Pennsylvania have said, nah, we don't care. All of it. Georgia's recount is only now looking at signatures. Only now. Or audit is only now looking at signatures. They're not looking at the rush of new registrants. We're still in the circumstantial case building. We're not looking, or we're told to ignore the fact that an executive with Dominion, their security chief, as Joel Osterman has reported with Conservative Daily, with a meticulously well-detailed piece of research. He said Trump's not going to win. I've taken care of that. He said that. We've played on the program multiple clips of people hacking Dominion voting machines. So we know that the opportunity existed in mail-in ballots, in signature falsification, in flooding the system with a whole bunch of fraudulent ballots, just betting that, you know, they can only catch so many. The circumstantial data, Joe Biden underperformed everywhere except five key states where he suddenly outperformed Barack Obama. The president had increases in voting from Hispanics, from black people, from Asian people, from gay people. But he lost white women in the key battleground states. Only. We're at the circumstantial point. Patterns. When the police are investigating crimes and they think there might be a repeat criminal, let's say a serial criminal at work, they look for patterns. In the case of, let's say, a series of break-ins, say that they're jimmying open a door in a house. Is it the same size crowbar? Do we have the same size tires? If we, it's a dirt driveway, can we access the tires? Security cameras, is it the same car? In the case of murders, rapes, do we see the same treatment of the victims, the same placement of the bodies? Is it the same time of day? Is it the same look of a person, victim? Same age? They look for patterns because patterns bespeak predictability. We know there was opportunity. We know there was motive. What are the patterns of crimes that are evidence of vote fraud? Text Todd, T-O-D-D, to 800-465-8770 to see this piece from Central City News. Patterns. When ballots are coming in, and it's a tight race between a Biden and a Trump, you have some places where one precinct leans Republican, another leans Democrat, and so you'll see swings back and forth. But this ballot, that ballot, some are poorly marked. Some people don't vote for president. Some people only vote for president. So you just see these randomized numbers. But not in two states. In two states, you saw patterns that are not randomized because there's nothing random about them. In between the randomized voting in Georgia, in factors of 1,200, the votes began to change. Trump was leading pretty impressively. We were told the counting stopped. Except in increments of 1,200, always increments of 1,200, just like it was programmed into a computer, vote dumps for Biden. 1,200. 2,400. 3,600. 4,800. Now, those aren't randomly generated. They're too precise. It's mathematical. It's logarithmic. And it served a purpose. So it's non-random. It's logarithmic. It's predictable. And it served a purpose to push Biden over the top. That was Georgia. This is detailed through the raw data feed that companies like the New York Times got from companies like Dominion. That's one state. Another state. Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania, same thing as Georgia, but the incremental numbers are different. Same thing, the president was ahead. Same thing, they said, oh, we're going to stop counting. Same thing happened. Same pattern. Not random. Vote dumps and factors of 2,000, 2,000, 4,000, and 6,000, serving a purpose to push Biden over the top. Or at least, I don't know, I can't say they're serving that purpose, but achieving the purpose of pushing Biden over the top. Predictable. Once you see the pattern, you can't unsee the pattern. This hasn't been investigated by the federal authorities. They're not going to investigate it. To me, unless Sidney Powell has gone insane or fell down and became stupid or is going to go into the grifting business, this has to be what she's looking at. Is that fraud? It's so persuasive. I would need someone to give me the explanation for how raw data displays patterns that are purposeful, non-random, and logarithmic or algorithmic. I'd need to be persuaded of that. And that's a tough thing. You would have to persuade me that useful, meaningful, understandable information can come about randomly, which incidentally has never happened. Then there's this from our friend Justin Hart, an independent data analyst, who, by the way, did a lot of work in politics. New York Times, same data that the Central City News is using, same data feed, has on Twitter his description. Check out the wild ride in Wisconsin where Donald Trump was leading by 51% all night until a 3:42 a.m. data dump. And guess what shape it is on the graph? A massive hockey stick for Joe Biden. I wonder if that's in increments of 2,000 or 4,000 or 6,000. 3:42 a.m. Hadn't they stopped counting? All those votes breaking for Biden. Remember, Seattle Times is telling us there is no evidence of any vote fraud. That's Wisconsin. Wonder if there's more. Michigan. Trump is leading. And then there's a momentum shift. At 6:31 a.m., 150,000 votes came in. 96% for Joe Biden. That is a very, very unusual thing to see in a 50-50 race. 150,000 votes. That means there's a city or something the size of a city where 96% of people voted for Biden. Or they just clumped those votes all together. Or they were digitally inserted. That's not been investigated fully. But there's no signs of vote fraud. Seattle Times assures us. So does Twitter. So does Facebook. So does cable news. President claimed without evidence. Wisconsin and Michigan. Justin Hart turns his attention now to more data. And the patterns repeat themselves. So we can go through circumstantial, we can go through environmental, we can go through the ability to commit fraud, such as in Georgia. 1:34 a.m., Biden gets a dump earning 82.4% of the votes that cut Trump's lead in half. Things over the next day continue, but then suddenly Donald Trump has thousands of votes subtracted, taken away. Now, as Justin points out, perhaps there's a good explanation for that. But is there a good explanation for it happening in Georgia and Michigan and Wisconsin and Pennsylvania? Is there a good explanation for it happening in algorithmic form? Predictable factors of numbers, all serving a purpose or appearing to serve a purpose, at least achieving a purpose of giving Joe Biden the lead. But the media, the same ones who starting in 2012 began warning us about Dominion voting, 2017 said the election was hacked. 2019, they were warning us about electronic voting with Dominion, showing us how easy it is to hack. The same media that refuses to correct the cases illusion is telling you there's no vote fraud, you silly conspiracy theorist. Text Todd, T-U-D-D, to 800-465-8770 to see some of the evidence. We'll continue. The big voice got it just about completely right, except one thing. If you're using the text line, give yourself a nickname. That way we feel like we are dealing with a human being, as you are, and not an area code. From email, therman@ktth.com. I don't often dig into the hate mail, but this one's so precise and so well said, I thought I'd just give it an airing. It's from Dwight. I tried to write back. Shockingly, Dwight has left himself a fake email address because Dwight is brave. It begins thusly. You blatant Nazi, I heard you with your disinformation this morning saying masks don't work. This has been done for 100 years, you Nazi Trump cult scum. For over 100 years, we've used masks to stop viruses, you idiot Nazi scum. He really likes that. Likes the cadence, idiot Nazi scum. It's a good beat. You can dance to it. You are getting people killed, not Governor Inslee. He is Governor Inslee, you Nazi scum. Dwight. He didn't even have a salutatory greeting at the end. He didn't even say have a good... Not even a have a good day. So I'm not certain that Dwight's ever actually heard the show, but he says he heard me talking about masks. Well, who's not talking about masks? Dwight, I really hate to be the person to break such awful news to you, but you really, 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 really are expert at knowing a lot of things that just aren't true. And so what that means is that you have things in your head memorized as fact that in fact don't have any fact to them. And this is a problem that we've got going on right now that is endemic. It's fascinating to see Dwight write this piece of hate mail to me, because over the weekend on Facebook, just glancing through my personal Facebook, which I rarely, if ever, use, I came across a note from a woman I know and I still consider a friend. And we haven't talked in many years, but we used to hang out a lot as family, not in that sort of way. But what she said is the same thing. She insists that prior to Trump, we used masks to stop viruses for 100 years. This is how intense disinformation is and how good the Mockingbird media is at distributing it. How long have you been alive? How many times have you seen a society in the West mask up? I'm in my 50s. I've never seen this before, because guess why? It's never been useful. The fact of the matter is, since the Spanish flu, when everybody wore a face covering, it was 100%. You could be shot for breaking quarantine. A sheriff could shoot you for breaking quarantine. We've known that the face coverings don't work. This is, see, I don't want to take Dwight to task, because Dwight's not, you don't go around in an email saying Nazi scum 10 different times and be smart. So I don't want to take him too far to task or put too much seriousness on what a troll says in an email. But this is how potent disinformation is. That people just believe that somehow this has permeated their mind, when a simple piece of research will indicate this. In fact, I want you to hear this. This is from PBS, and it is prior to the politicization. Politicization? It's a stupid word. Prior to politicizing. Now I'm all scrambled. Prior to politicizing. Now I did it again. Got myself a disease. Prior to Orange Man Bad, there were sober people who looked back at history, and they didn't ever know they'd be politicizing. There I go. Politicizing a virus. They just did what PBS did. They did a history of the Spanish flu in the United States. And here's what they said in the PBS story.
The epidemic was now a national crisis. Something had to be done. In many places, officials rushed through laws requiring people to wear masks in public. All of America, it seemed, put on masks. At last, many thought, they were safe. But masks didn't help. They were thin and porous. No serious restraint to tiny microbes. It was like trying to keep out dust with chicken wire. In Washington, D.C., Commissioner Lewis Brownlow banned all public gatherings. He closed the city's schools, theaters, and bars. He quarantined the sick. He did everything he had the power to do. But the death rate in Washington kept rising. A resolution shot through Congress giving the Public Health Service $1 million to fight the flu. Biochemists around the country worked feverishly to develop a vaccine.
See that? That was prior to the politicizing of all of this. They knew it didn't work. That was what the studies showed. Next up on the text line from Dallas. Is that the name? Or is that the location? I need to know if it's... Okay, I'm going to call you Dallas as a nickname. That's your nickname now. You've earned that. Todd, Washington State sounds just as bad as you describe it, but I've got a daughter who's moving up there for work. What advice do you have? Don't. No, seriously, don't. I mean, unless your daughter works up here physically and has to do physical work, and you didn't indicate that. If she's in the, and I'm assuming that she's being recruited, if she's being recruited to come up here, don't. Don't do it. Like, just stay out. Don't come. The place, look, this is a society in decline. Washington State is a society in decline. And I don't mean like in the Seattle is dying sense. I mean literally a society in decline. Let me give you some indicators. The Seattle Police Department is going to be somewhere near 400 officers short. How am I getting to that number? Because they were like 200 officers short a couple of years ago. They've had a couple of hundred leave. There's a precipitous decline. Jason Rantz has a story. Text Rantz, R-A-N-T-Z, to 800-465-8770. You can read it for yourself. This is number one. They're collapsing in an era of lawlessness. The lawlessness in the Seattle area is pronounced. You can do the following things in Seattle and not get arrested. You can walk up right across the street from a cop. You can tie off your arm, slap it up, use your teeth to pull the rubber tie, jam a heroin needle into your vein, walk away. Cop is not to do anything. You can jam your pockets full of fentanyl, get busted for an assault or something, be out the next day. You can, courtesy of a judge, so-called, Veronica Alicia Galvan, who has bragged about the fact that being part of the resistance, she considers being part of the resistance her job as a judge, resisting the orders and laws passed and signed, or bills passed and signed into law by President Trump. She has said she considers being the resistance part of her job. You can beat people. You can do things like beat people with baseball bats, assault people with baseball bats, and judges like, and in this case, like Veronica Alicia Galvan, bye-bye. Show up to court, won't you? I'm going to release you and you're in recognizance. That would be where your daughter is moving. The lawlessness extends to the seizure of private property. There's no such thing as private property in Washington state. It does not exist. Inslee, at the stroke of a pen, will simply say, you can no longer earn a living by charging people to live in your property. I have taken that from you for almost a year. Almost a year. And it will extend into next year. People need to stop pretending this is temporary because there's nothing temporary about it. Please don't have your daughter move up. No, I'm not. Why would I joke? I'm deadly. I would never tell anyone to move here. Now, I mean, the good things about Washington State, it's utterly beautiful. And this just makes me sad to say. It's utterly beautiful. An early morning drive across the 520 bridge. From the east side to downtown Seattle, it's one of the most stunning things you'll ever see in your life. Driving across a pristine lake in the middle of an urban corridor. Some mornings when the mountains are out, that's the things we say up here, the mountains are out. Because some days you'll see mountains. You could live here for 5 years. And on a particularly clear day, at a particularly good moment in time, you wake up in the morning and go, wow. There's other mountains I've never seen. Visit. But don't go downtown. Dallas, I'm not kidding. Have your daughter turn around. This is not a place for a young woman. We'll come back on the Todd Herman Show, wrap up the day with a personal note on AM 770 KTTH.
Down on Main Street.
On a personal note today, it is probably the last time I'm going to chat with you on this radio station before Thanksgiving. And I will be in tomorrow for Rush Limbaugh on his program and chatting with you then. But it's Rush's show and it's not mine. So Thanksgiving to you. Happy Thanksgiving to you and a joyous Thanksgiving to you. On a personal note, in regards to Thanksgiving, my dad had the weirdest sort of array of people in his life around Thanksgiving. And part of it had to do with the way he earned his living. I mean, he had family. He had the main family Thanksgiving that was with myself and my sister and my mom, his divorced wife. And they were always really good about making sure that we had Thanksgiving together as a family. And then the adopted family of his second wife. And not I shouldn't say adopted family. That's not right. But my half-brother's family and the grandmother of which is a lovely human being. In fact, I love my cousins and people relationships I gained through that marriage. But he also had a collection of misfits. And that's what they called themselves, the Thanksgiving misfits. And so my father would have his meeting with the Thanksgiving misfits. And the misfits came about, as I said, because of the way he earned his living. So the misfits arrayed from social workers like him, to clients, successful clients, who have turned their lives around, to clients who are still working on turning their lives around, to people that they met in the field of trying to turn people around. And so sometimes the Thanksgivings took on just wild, wild parameters. It's not like Johnny Carson, they're wild, wild stuff. And one such Thanksgiving occurred in a RV and a trailer parked outside of a jail cell in a small town in northeastern Washington state. There may or may not have been some alcohol, and there may or may not have been a little fire in the parking lot for Thanksgiving. When you're a social worker, this is one of the things that my dad told me, is you meet people at their worst and best moments. And in that way, it's like a cop, except cops don't normally get to see the best moments. Sadly, they just see the worst moments. So dad always tried to make sure that the cops could come and see the good moments. Hey, do you remember the family where we had to take the kid out because there was this terrible happening at home? Guess what? They're being reunited. I'd like you to come. It's one of the things that the cops loved about my dad, is he'd put a call into him. So you guys, remember that little boy? The couple was fighting and the mother had flown off the handle and sent the kid out shivering in the cold and sweat out of the bath. And we went there to take the kid away. They're reuniting as a family and things are good. Why don't you come? You were the guys who were there that night. Why don't you come? So from time to time, this would occur and these cops would come. This was one of those Thanksgivings, except there wasn't going to be any reuniting because one of the members was still in jail. Still behind bars. And this happens sometimes in the social work field, right? It's not always successful. But my dad put the calls into the cops and said, hey, here's what's going on. It's in a jail in another town, but would you come? I'd like you to come and celebrate Thanksgiving outside of a jail in a small town in northeastern Washington that I can't give up. I don't know about the statute of limitations or what laws may or may not have been broken, and I couldn't confirm or deny that any were. So on this particular Thanksgiving, the Thanksgiving Misfit crew got an RV and got my dad's old trailer, which was an embarrassment. So in this small town, the Thanksgiving Misfit crew met. And it's kind of an interesting crew because you had with them, there's a couple of women who loved my father dearly as social workers and as friends. I mean, I'm saying in a platonic sense. They were there with the salads. My dad was responsible for bringing the turkey. My dad liked to cook turkey, so he was responsible for a couple of turkeys. That was in the old Shasta trailer. And in the RV came what may have been a bar and adult beverages and perhaps some country music and some more fixins, as they would say back in the day. Some of the other people who were there, this gentleman who owned the welding shop, he was in his mid-30s, and he had been one of my dad's clients who my dad kind of rescued as a social worker. He was a very backward kid, a very, very angry kid, and a kid set about destruction until my dad showed him what he could do with a welding tool and how he could make the outside world go away. And Roger told me about this with my dad. Then my dad taught him how to weld, taught him to put himself in this position where it was just him and the metal. And back then, we didn't have Walkmans. We had stereos. So in the garage, my dad had him bring his big 8-track stereo out, throw on the headphones, make sure that the wires didn't burn, and crank up the music. And that was the beginning of Roger's career as a welder. So he became very successful and had a welding shop in one town, and in fact, was building one in another. And he was at this event. And Roger brought a couple of very, very classic trucks to this. So here we are outside of a jail in a northeastern Washington town with Roger and the two ladies. And I'm saying their names on purpose because I don't even know if they still work in social work. They might still be in it. So my dad called me. The Thanksgiving Misfits are getting together. Why don't you come? So I drove to a small town in northeastern Washington that I will not name because they don't know about the status of all the legalities, parked outside of the small town jail. There's the RV, the trucks, Roger's gear, the ladies, a bunch of other people, probably about 20 people, most of whom I cannot remember by name. And I don't specifically remember their stories. I know there were a range of recovered clients and clients who didn't recover. And then in the jail cell, the misfit of all misfits. The misfit who refused every command to come out of the jail cell. refused every command to come out, even though the sentence was up. The sentence was self-imposed. This was a guy who had spent his life as a cop. And as a cop, he'd put many a person in a jail cell. And in his retirement, he decided he wanted to know what it felt like to be in the jail cell. Hence the two officers that my father invited. Hence them seeing one of their colleagues deciding to spend a couple of days in a small town jail. So they all gathered around. And it may have been that from time to time they passed a bottle inside. It may have been from time to time some alcohol made it in. But I definitely made this in. It's an opportunity to go into the jail cell and talk to this officer, who I will not name, because I don't know the legalities of everything. But what he told me as he was sitting in the jail cell and he decided to spend Thanksgiving in there, is he said, this is for all the people who turned it around. This is for all the people I arrested who saw it as a moment hitting zero and a moment where they turned it around. And as a cop, I've not met a lot of these people. So the people that your dad brought out there tonight, that's why I continued to do what I have done my whole life. This makes it worthwhile. This and the Johnny Walker Black. It was a different era. And I went out with the Thanksgiving Misfits, and I saw the cops meeting one of the families they'd interacted with. And I saw my dad with his long gray beard just a year or so from retirement. And I saw him in his element. A great big huge farmer strong man who could break an axe handle over his knee. Sitting there with his adored and beloved adopted family of Thanksgiving misfits. And somehow, though I wasn't one of his misfits, I felt truly at home. May God bless you on this Thanksgiving and forever. May you have in your heart true gratitude, even in these incredibly insane times. And I thank you for you and for your loyalty to this program, because it simply wouldn't exist without you. Thank you from the bottom of my heart and from my family. The great Rush Limbaugh program is next. I will be in for Rush tomorrow. A whole bunch of hard-hitting politics. Get us anywhere you get podcasts. It's the Todd Herman Show. Go be well, be strong, and be kind.